Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Sean Marshall, who is a transit advocate and writer who will be appearing at the first annual Transit Summit and Town Hall hosted by the Transit Action Alliance of Guelph this Saturday. Today we will try and set the table, if you will, for Saturday's summit and look at some of the transit issues that are universal across the province and some of the issues that are specific to our area and the lessons we might be able to take from other municipalities as we try to expand transit here. For instance, why is it so hard to make a case to expand transit? Why is it so hard to get investment? Why is there so much politics in the process? We might not answer all those questions today, but we will try and we'll talk about other transit stuff too, which is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. So these are interesting transit times. Locally, we're in the middle of the creation of a transportation master plan here in Guelph, up the road in Kitchener-Waterloo. There's the long-awaited LRT that finally started running this past summer. In Toronto, the city council there finally reached a deal with the government of Ontario to fund new subway expansion while retaining the ownership of the present system and all, while Metrolinx is doing its damnedest to make sure two-way, all-day GO trains become a reality on the Kitchener line. That's all good, but let's ask some obvious questions. Why can't we hop on a bus in Guelph and go directly to London, or Hamilton, or even Cambridge? If there's more demand for transit service, then where are the private operators like Greyhound, and why is Greyhound cutting service? In Guelph, why does it sound like there are at least a couple of people on City Council that sound like they want to think transit as a money-making endeavor, as a for-profit service? Of course, there's also the most important question. What will it take to get more people out of their private automobiles and start using more transit? These are the questions I've been trying to get an answer to since the beginning of the existence of this podcast. Not to mention the entire Guelph Politico venture. And I've never really come up with anything solid. So now I'm going to look to a kindred spirit and wonder if maybe they feel the same. Sean Marshall is just such a kindred spirit. He's a geographer by training, but he's made a name for himself as one of the preeminent voices on transit issues, covering them on the TVO website, as well as his own personal website, by digging into the history and the challenges all around the province in creating more transit and better active transportation options. So this week on the podcast, let's consider it a preamble to the Transit Summit this weekend. I talked to Marshall about growing up as a transit nerd in Brampton and how the much maligned GTA municipality might actually be a really positive example of transit expansion done right. We also talk about the transit challenges in Guelph and the region from Marshall's perspective, and we get into the weeds about the Ontario Line two-way all-day go and the transit plans from the provincial government. And then we'll finally talk about the role of private operators and what role they can play in answering the transit needs of Ontario. So I caught up with Sean Marshall by phone from Toronto earlier this week. Sean Marshall, thank you so much for joining me today.
All right, hi, nice to meet you.
Let's start with the basics. What was it about, I guess, covering transit and talking about transit issues that that got you interested? You know, what's your kind of origin story?
Well, I lived in Brampton for most of my life before moving to Toronto, and I didn't have a car growing up, and Brampton's not the kind of place that's easy to get around without a car, so I was interested in transit very relatively early on, and having to commute to Ryerson, downtown Toronto, from Brampton was difficult. Mm. Fares were high, service was actually really bad at the time, especially if one was commuting during not 9 to 5 hours. Bus service was very limited. And I started to become interested in intercity and regional transportation as well as local public transit in Brampton, the Greater Toronto Area, and eventually within Ontario itself.
Mm. I think you get into this in a lot of the writing you've done, that there was a very specific change to Brampton over the years. Like as you grew up in Brampton, it became less sort of its own thing and more of the bedroom community and more of the commuter community that Brampton is sort of typically thought of now as part of part of the GTHA as much as part of its, it has its own identity. And I'm wondering, given, you know, your point of view, because I have this feeling, too, that maybe Guelph is undergoing that change now, too, that, you know, Guelph still does have a very distinctive identity of its own. But, you know, there's a huge portion of the city that I think is very much driven by that culture that overtook Brampton when you were coming up.
Guelph was a much larger city even back in 100 years ago. It had its own little streetcar system.
Yes.
It had the Ontario Agricultural College, which became part of the University of Guelph that really came onto its own in the 1960s, 1970s. And it had a larger downtown with a bustling commercial core. Brampton was never more than 5,000 people or so until the late 1950s or the 1960s, when it became within the commuter zone of Toronto as the roads opened up.
Mm.
And then the GO train started in 1973. So Brampton quickly became a small, sleepy railway junction with a few little small industries and greenhouses to a large to a large bedroom community almost overnight.
Mm.
By 1970, it was between Brampton and Bramley, it was over 100,000 people. By 1990, it was 250,000. Today, it's over 600,000.
Right.
And for a long time, transit there was a joke. GO Transit didn't run buses to Union Station during the off-peak except every 3 hours.
Mm.
Until about 2004, 2005, when they finally figured out that they could add buses. And since then, they've been adding more and more. And now we're adding trains. There's train service coming up to Brampton as well now, where we have a few more trains during rush hours, and then some more afternoon trains, Mount Pleasant, and some evening trains now.
Right.
The course of stickler there are the CNO track and GO Transit. Metrolinx, I should say. Metrolinx has to invest money on rail expansion, especially through downtown Brampton.
Mm-hmm.
The Brampton Transit itself changed dramatically. Pretty much about the time I left for Toronto, we went from a very hub-and-spoke system centered around shopping malls to a much more grid-based system. That was in 2005.
Right.
And eventually a ridership expanded as service was expanded. In 2010, they launched their first Zoom route, which actually took passengers to places beyond the city boundaries,
right,
including York University. And then by 2014, there are several Zoom routes across the city that provided a relatively frequent, rapid service while not ignoring some of those local routes that feed that system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been one of those suburban success stories that I don't think there's enough awareness of. And that was just by expanding the system beyond the boundaries to places that make sense, Square One, New York University, a GO station, the Moulton GO station, and then expanding service to Pearson Airport and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That really acknowledge that most Bramptonians don't work within the city.
Right.
They have jobs in Toronto and Mississauga and in Vaughan. And that's where they're bringing the buses to. And it's been the last couple of years, ridership growth has been, you know, 14%, 18%, 9%. Much higher than any other GTA transit system.
It's interesting to hear you talk about it as a success story, because I think a lot of people thinking about urban sprawl, thinking about that changing landscape, consider Brampton like a failure on that account, that it's grown so vast, it's you know, grown so wide. But to hear it in the context that as transit as having been successful in terms of maybe integrating that or being able to adapt to that growing landscape. You're right. I don't think people think of Brampton in that regard as being successful in adapting.
Except it is. And
yeah.
It's just been, it's just a commitment to growing the service. to ensuring that new subdivisions are provided with buses, even if they're infrequent and during rush hour only.
Mm.
But then that's usually expanded within the next couple of years to all day, 6 or 7 day service. It proves that you can make transit work pretty much anywhere as long as you have a city government that's committed to improving transit,
mm-hmm.
and as long as you work at it over many years. Mm. It takes quite a long time to build that kind of ridership and sustain that kind of ridership when residents know they can rely on your service.
Right. So, you know, that kind of leadership, the long-term visioning is rare, and you're probably aware of this, that the issues in London, where they come up with the rapid bus plan, one council does, then that council is voted out, and then there's a new council that cancels that plan. In your understanding, you know, what made Brampton so visionary? Like, what was the X factor that allowed them to succeed where others have failed?
Well, it's interesting I mentioned London, and originally, yes, it was going to be a light rail plan, then it became a BRT plan, and whatever they have now is quite watered down every time there's a new council elected. Hamilton has that issue as well, back and forth debating the LRT along Main and King Streets there.
Mm-hmm.
And Brampton's had that issue with the light rail that's now about to be built down to Port Credit in Mississauga.
Right.
And that's because even though Brampton has been committed to operating more buses, there's been a divide on council between more conservative white councillors, I guess I could say, and a younger, more progressive, diverse population.
Right.
In the last election, we elected Brampton elected Patrick Brown, the former Progressive Conservative leader of Ontario,
mm-hmm.
but he's been so far very pragmatic. And council itself, he's taken lead from council in many cases.
Mm.
So I have to give him credit for that. And maybe we're going to see light rail coming back to downtown Brampton.
Mm.
But there's a small established elite who live in the south end of downtown Brampton, including the former Premier of Ontario, Bill Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been antagonistic towards building the light rail north of Shoppers World at Fields Avenue into downtown Brampton, despite the fact that that's one of the main GO train stations. That's where connections can be made to places like Toronto, Guelph, Kitchener, Waterloo.
Yeah.
And that's where the city at the same time is trying to promote growth. That's where the city and the province and the previous Liberal government decided to build a new university campus, for
mm-hmm.
example. And that's where the city is trying to build a new flood protection system and public space to protect the downtown from future flooding.
Right.
So there's a lot. Despite the fact that Brampton has been quite good at funding the local bus system, and I think it's one of their success stories, it's not even playing up as much as they should.
Mm.
There's also some issues in Brampton local politics that I'd be remiss not to discuss as well.
Right. You know, there's always going to be some opposition, you know, no matter how good a plan or how no matter how obvious, because to take that system into the downtown where you do get all those connections at the GO station makes a terrible sense. But
and alternative alignments would have taken that light rail far out of its intended path.
Right.
And would have negated any travel time savings or any that the light rail would bring.
I want to talk about the bigger picture. I'm sure you are following this situation as well, being someone who lives in Toronto, but also someone who's interested in transit, the changes to the proposed subway expansion. And this is another example, I think, of where changes in government bring wholesale changes in transit. So just from your point of view, we now have the City of Toronto and the Government of Ontario teaming up on the subway expansion. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but is this going to happen the way it's been laid out by the government, or do you think John Tory is sort of hedging his bets that maybe Doug Ford's not going to be around in 2.5 years?
I don't know. They've been going so back and forth on so many different subway plans.
Yeah.
Is that for a little while we thought they were going to get a grade separated light rail line up to Central Scarborough and extend it north into Melbourne. And the construction of that was fully funded. Construction was almost ready to go. And then we had Rob Ford elected mayor of Toronto. And all that changed very quickly. And we had a provincial government that's kind of afraid of antagonizing him and his brother, Doug, who decided to change the subway plans there. And yet nothing's been built.
Right. Nothing.
And meanwhile, the SRT, which is similar to the SkyTrain in Vancouver, it's a decent technology, but it has a limited capacity, especially if you don't run those trains that often, and you have to have new equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So those old cars built in 1983-84 are breaking down. They're not reliable. The system needs a total refresh. And there's no plan right now that's about to get built to fix that.
Yeah.
One stop subway, three stop subway, two stop subway. Right now we're looking at a three stop subway game, but with the Ontario line now taking any priority, who knows what's going to happen there? John Tory himself should take some of the blame himself for pushing his Smart Track plan, which was supposed to be he called it London-style surface subway,
right,
like a regional rail system that's going to go from the airport to Unionville and Markham. But now at most, it's a few more GO train stations and more GO train service along the Lakeshore and the Stouffville lines. It's practically nothing. But by pushing for SmartTrack, that took a lot of the momentum away from the downtown relief line, which was the original plan to relieve the congestion downtown at Bloor Young and to make sure that riders from Toronto suburbs could actually get on the subway during rush hour. That was the big plan of it. The Ontario line looks great on paper. It looks great on paper. It's longer. It covers more ground. It's smaller trains and automated,
right,
similar to Vancouver's Canada line, which if you can get enough capacity to serve neighborhoods that are currently under service, Thorncliffe Park, Flemington Park, along Don Mills corridor, that's great. And but there's too many unknowns with it. It's definitely not anywhere near shovel ready. It takes a lot of the work that's been done by the TEC and it makes that redundant. I mean, it can be done within 6 years. There's Montreal's electric metropolitan system that's supposed to be this new automated light rail network to cover City of Montreal and some of the suburbs is going through it very quickly. So it's possible, and I would not want the Ontario line to stop if nothing else has done its way. I don't want it to become another Scarborough subway extension.
Right.
So on paper it looks good. I just don't have confidence that it's going to get done like any other plant system's going to get done.
I wonder if maybe when we're talking about transit projects, and maybe there's this is sort of the political feeling of certainly the politics have been going anyway, that any announcement that we've got more transit than coming is sort of maybe the point, as opposed to like making actual progress, because it seems like there's an understanding that more transit is needed, but there seems to be no, I guess, no consensus between any levels of government in terms of what the first steps should be or even what it should look like by the time it's finished.
I think the federal government will fund anything as long as the other two levels of government agree to it, especially with a minority government.
Right.
Neither the Liberals nor the Conservatives, if they come into power in the next election, would not want to give Toronto money for building a line that the Mayor Tory and Premier Ford have agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Ontario line really has a somewhat different alignment, but it's not a complete deviation from the intent of the relief line that came before it that all politicians thought was necessary once they realized there's nothing else you can do up through a young.
Right. I do wonder, and you've probably seen Adam Vaughan comment on this, but I've heard Adam Vaughan say that, in no uncertain terms, he's not a fan of the Ontario line, and he does not seem particularly willing to even entertain the possibility. And I wonder what effect that's going to have when the time finally comes for the federal government to talk about money.
I like Adam Vaughan. I do. But he's a former Toronto City councillor that fought with the Ford.
Mm-hmm.
He's very outspoken. There's probably a reason he's not in cabinet.
Right.
That when the time comes and when the mayor and the premier both say this is what we need to build, and the federal government wants to show that the infrastructure bank that they've been promoting so heavily, it's a project to fund.
Right.
I think he'll end up towing the line in the end.
Mm.
There's valid criticism about the Ontario line because it came, like the alignment came out of nowhere. There's no plan. There's no planning behind it.
Right.
So what it does provide some of the benefits that the first phase of a heavy rail subway relief line would not provide.
Mm. Yeah, I think that part of the issue was that it did seem to come out of nowhere, and it did seem to be the government's reaction, like, we need to do something, this is what it has to do, so this is what it could look like. And maybe that's not the process someone who, you know, has been steeped in politics his whole life like Adam Vaughan would like. But, I mean, it is a plan, say what you want about it.
And it right now, that's where all the political capital is being focused.
Right.
I think that's what we have to, sometimes you just have to take what you're given.
Mm. Which
sometimes,
is...
Sometimes.
Well, I was going to say, that's not, you know, exactly the tone you... that we're going for in politics now, where it's very much in terms of the voters and in terms of people, you know, advocating for changes, it's like, this is what we want, give it to us, and this is the reverse flight where you have the Ontario government saying, this is what we're giving to you, take it or leave it.
Sometimes, I know, it's not ideal. I would have loved for the relief line subway to be constructed back maybe 10 years ago, back when David Miller was pushing the Trans-City Light Rail Network.
Mm.
It was a clearly missing component mm-hmm. of his transit plan. And the fact that there is nothing between the Don Mills Light Rail line at Haight and downtown meant that maybe they're leaving room for it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was too much focus on building light rail where sometimes it didn't make sense, like
right.
on Jane Street south of Dundas, where there's no room to build that light rail,
mm-hmm.
or Don Mills, where you're just going to dump more riders at Pape Station and into Lower Yonge.
Right.
So the Transit City we're getting the Eglinton Crosstown Light Rail out of it. And supposedly we're going to get the Shepherd East Light Rail out of it.
Mm.
But that's the construction stalled there.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to get the Finch West LRT. It's not on its own a system.
Right.
And what Toronto's been missing for decades has been a system-wide plan.
Right.
Rather than connecting dots.
Right. And I think that could be said just about of any transit plan, no matter the system you're talking about, that it's a system of trying to address the gaps, and there's really kind of no holistic thought about how this would impact the overall system.
And if you look at the Unitarian line, it's the process of it being proposed and now being championed by the mayor and the premier.
Mm.
I can't agree with it. But it is more a system, it's got more system to it than most of the other plans we've seen lately. It connects with the GO train at Exhibition Station.
Mm.
That can provide some relief to Union Station, which is also a terrible bottleneck.
Mm.
It provides more service to Liberty Village and provides some relief from the King Car, which is, despite the improvements on King Street with the traffic pilot,
mm-hmm.
it's still overburdened with passengers in rush hour. It does continue north from the Danforth subway up to Don Mills and Eglinton, where it'll connect with the Crosstown LRT. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of network connectivity to it, and I think that's one of the biggest advantages of building this system as a whole right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Ontario line. So it does have some advantages that, I don't trust Ford. I don't really trust John Tory either. But I can see the motivation for building it. They both want to have a win.
Right.
And really, it's not the worst idea out there. It really isn't. Of all the transit plans that we've had over the years, the Scarborough Subway.
Hmm.
Sorry, not Scarborough. The Scarborough Subway, the Shepherd Subway that was partially built.
Right.
Some of those transit city lines. This is not the worst idea that's come forward. So sometimes, yeah, you have to take it.
Okay. That's not exactly the ring endorsement of public policy you want, not the worst idea, but...
Once in a while, it's like the story about the broken watch, right?
Right, right. Fair enough. I do want to get your opinion on another piece of a provincial policy. It was almost a year ago, Jeff Urich, who was then the transportation minister, was in Kitchener announcing two extra trains for the GO train. And he said that he thought it would be likely that two-day all-way GO would be happening on the Kitchener line within 12 to 18 months. It's been almost the end of 12 months. Do you think two-way all-day GO, we'll see that in maybe by next summer?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, there's several construction works that are underway on the what used to be called the Georgetown South Corridor. That's between Bramley and Union.
Yeah.
There's only three tracks around there. And when they built the tunnel and the expansion of the track, it was mostly to benefit the Up Express line, not the GO service. Up Express has the priority on that. And that's partly because it wants to capture a very different market than mm-hmm. than commuter regional rail. Those trains run every 15 minutes, and the most that GO Transit can run along that corridor might be a train every hour or at best every half hour
mm-hmm.
along there. And they can only run it in one direction during peak hours, because you have so many trains going outbound in the afternoons and inbound in the morning.
Right.
There's not enough capacity there.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to build a fourth track, and they're starting work to do that. So they're going to have to move the rail path in downtown Toronto and up to the Junction Triangle. They're building a second tunnel under the 401
mm-hmm.
near the Highway 409 that will allow for four tracks through there. They have to move or close Etobicoke North Station because it only has the one platform. And then you get into Brampton itself, where you have CN's main freight line.
Mm-hmm.
You could. So Metrolinx's plan is to run all-day service every 50 minutes, only as far as Bramley, which is really a terrible place to terminate transit. It's the middle of an industrial area.
Right.
It's surrounded by major truck routes. Few people live within walking distance of that station. And access even to the 401 is restricted because of the way the interchange is set up to Bramley Road.
Right.
For connecting buses. So Bramley Station is not ideal, but it is at the extent of the track that Metrolinx owns. Mm. It can run all its trains through without getting CN's dispatching permission. So beyond there, you have to expand at least a third track to downtown Brampton, which is a pinch point.
Right.
At what, about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I should say, GO Transit did build a second track through a section that's only single.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed them to get a few more trains in. They built a second platform at Brampton that allowed those trains that currently go as far as Mount Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can't run trains going the other direction to rush hours, and you can't get more than an hourly service.
Mm-hmm. Then I wonder, you know, where this bravado comes from then, because they seem to be convinced they can do it without the bypass, but most of the experts I've talked to say that, no, you have to do the bypass. And at what point does, I guess, the reality conflict with the fantasy?
Well, the bypass would remove CN entirely from the equation, apart from a few local freight services.
Mm-hmm.
That would not interfere with GO's operations.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have cleared up Brampton without doing any more work. Brampton, the city of Brampton right now, is planning a couple of downtown projects. They're not going to build the university as planned, as the government, the provincial government, cut the funding after the election last year.
Right.
But they are still committed to redevelopment there. So it's going to have a new bus terminal. That bus terminal was built in such a way that they can build a third track.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to build a new library education center that could support a university campus if that ever gets built.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that third track through downtown Brampton, CN only needs one or one and a half of those tracks. GO Transit could then have hourly, all-day, two-way service to Kitchener.
Mm-hmm.
Once the work is done through Central Toronto at the 401 and through downtown Brampton, then you could have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then have express train, those trains going express from Bramley to Union,
mm-hmm.
and then having that regular local, more frequent service between Bramley and Union stopping at all those stops along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be another 3 or 4 years at least,
mm-hmm.
because of the work required through downtown Brampton.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things at play. One is the provincial government, but it's also dependent on Brampton too doing some work as well. And there seems to be no, at least not publicly, the coordination there to make the two-way all day possible in, you know, the immediate future, shall we say.
I'm more confident, Diane, than I was maybe 5 or 10 years ago.
Mm.
That eventually it will come. I mean, we've had the new evening trains,
mm-hmm.
just now come into place. And I think service will start once work is mostly completed in Central Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't run the trains on weekends, it's hard to get some of that construction work done.
Right.
Once that's done, I could see hourly weekend service, if not all the way to Kitchener, and at least Mount Pleasant,
mm-hmm.
to start. A couple other things need to be done to make Kitchener service more feasible is, I haven't ridden that line between Guelph and Kitchener in a little bit, but I understand they're working on improving the speed.
Yeah.
If you ride via or go through there, it crawls from Guelph Station to about where it goes over Highway 6.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of streets that are at track level.
Yeah, there's a couple of streets there along 10th Street there. But then it also has to crawl through where there's a junction with the old Fergus sub.
Right.
Where the line heads down to Hespler or up to the industrial park.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. And that's partially Goderich and Exeter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not keeping the track up to par. Now that Metrolinx owns that section and CN owns the section west of Guelph, hopefully we'll see some speed improvements.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires a bit of work, requires some new signaling, it requires, I think, probably some new switches in place and some fencing to go up.
Mm-hmm.
To get the trains up. Even if they increase it from 10 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour, that's a substantial improvement through that section.
Yeah, small moves. We're kind of going a bit over time, but I do want to get your point of view on one last thing, which is the role of sort of private operators in sort of improving transit, because we're seeing things like, I mean, Root, which I know you took it for a test drive, so to speak, but that's no longer there. But I mean, there are kind of experiments in, you know, how can we use private operators or use things like rideshare where transit connections aren't as plentiful and maybe where there isn't the budget to maybe start a transit system. What do you think the role is going to be for private operators as we look to expand transit?
Well, I'll speak about this as well on Saturday.
Okay.
But Root's issue was that the fares were quite high,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't direct downtown to downtown services either.
Mm.
Root would get you from Fairview Mall to University of Guelph or to downtown Guelph, but it was by a convoluted route, and the fares were high because they're used in small vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the route to Hamilton from Guelph. At least they tried it. So they went to going to Aldershot,
right?
And I commend them for trying it, but I don't think it was a stable model at the end, given the fact that you had small cars, few passengers, and you're paying had to pay the drivers. I think the private sector has a role here.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in Northern Ontario riding from Sudbury to Thunder Bay, and without Greyhound, the only services through there are Ontario Northland, which only covers northeastern Ontario, which is very frequent service.
Yeah.
And Casper, which is a company that runs daily services using smaller minivans.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller coaches on a scheduled basis between White River, Thunder Bay, out to Rainy River, and up out to Sioux Lookout and off to Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making a go of it, but he spoke about the costs of operating such a service, even as a private operator, the insurance, wages, fuel, and any sort of breakdown that happens, it's not like you can get another vehicle over quickly because
right.
the distance is up there. You'd love to see the government subsidize some of these services, and I couldn't disagree.
Mm.
If government is allowing Greyhound and Coach Canada and some other private operators to abandon the feeder lines that used to be offered in exchange for having the contracts for the lucrative runs like Toronto, Montreal,
right,
Kingston, Ottawa, and then out to London and Windsor. Those are the Niagara. Those are lucrative routes. Those are the ones that make money. But in exchange for that, they used to have to run these more rural, remote services as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if they abandon them without consequence, because they're not as profitable as they'd like to be, or they cut service and that cuts ridership,
right?
And if anybody wants to take it over, it's a very expensive proposition. And yes, there should be subsidies to help get that going again. Because we subsidize the roads, we subsidize. Via Rail is subsidized, Ontario Northland is subsidized, and that's great. But we should be subsidizing private operators to ensure that they can make a go of this. And the other problem in Guelph to Kitchener to Hamilton is that they're intermunicipal.
Mm.
Where Simcoe County has an interesting system being set up, and I'll speak about this as well, called Lynx,
mm-hmm.
which connects Barrie with Orillia and with Midland and out to Collingwood, Wasaga Beach. But that's a county-level service, and that provides services within the county. They can do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to run a service between Kitchener and Guelph when you actually have two different regional governments, a
right.
county and a region, and four municipalities actually has passed through.
Right.
And Greyhound still technically owns the franchise for coaches, for coach service between Kitchener and Guelph, even though that service has degraded over many years.
Right.
Go can do it by rail, but until you have rail that runs in both directions at frequent times, it's very difficult to get between the two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just from my own conversations with Metroland, it's not kind of like etched in stone that they can't tread on Greyhound's, I guess, their routes. But I mean, if Greyhound is servicing a route, Metrolinx won't put a bus on it. Meanwhile, Greyhound is cutting its service, and Metrolinx is, you know, won't step in to fill the void unless there is actually a void that has been made.
Yeah,
and there is a void between Guelph and Hamilton.
Yeah,
that Coach Canada, the successor to the misly owned Canada Coach Lines, abandoned, and then you had a Belttown give it a shot, but the Belttown went bankrupt.
Right,
and you had Root trying it, and Root couldn't make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that Go Transit should do, but Go Transit still fixated on a radio system around Toronto.
Right. Right.
And it's time that Go Transit, that Metrolinx, go beyond it. They run buses and trains to Kitchener. They run buses and trains to Hamilton. But the only way you get between the two is to take two or three buses with a transfer at square one.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's as long as you intersect with Toronto at some point, you can get anywhere. But if you want to get from point A to point B and not have to go through Toronto, you're having trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've probably nicely set the table for your talk on Saturday. And we will see what happens when you come to town. Actually, before I let you go, you're coming to town on transit. We already talked on email that you were coming to town on transit. Do you know how you are coming to Guelph?
I'm going to be transferring to Square One.
Okay, so you're going to be taking...
The Via Rail gets there too late for mm-hmm. 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be taking a bus from Union Station to Square One and transferring to another bus at downtown Guelph.
I think that's the way.
That's the only feasible way to make this, to make it, the journey work.
All right. Maybe we'll see if we can advocate for some alternatives in the near future. But I'll let you go from here. I'm just going to end up cut off the podcast, and then I'll give you a real goodbye. But okay, so Sean Marshall, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you this weekend.
I look forward to it, too. Thank you.
And once again, that was Sean Marshall, and you can read his writings at tvo.org or at his blog, seanmarshall.ca. And remember that you will be able to hear Marshall live and in person, as well as other speakers, at the first annual Transit Summit and Town Hall this Saturday at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church from 12 to 5:30 p.m. And you can register to attend the summit for free at taaguelph.com. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is recorded at CFRU at the University Center of the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, you can go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. When you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will also get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Go to Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out GuelphPolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.